So hello everybody, my name is Caleb, and I'm the GNOME software guy here. So David said, we were both at Flock last week with Richard, and we decided that Richard gives a GNOME software talk at Flock, and I'm going to do the same here. So I have a slight problem. I'm not sure how to go to the next slide here. So hold on, maybe I'll.
It's pinpoint, right? If anyone knows.
The slide is fantastic.
Yeah, I know, right? Okay, that's a little bit more promising. Okay, maybe this works better. Yay! Now it works. Okay. So I have no idea what's wrong with me, but I always manage to get like the most horrible cold during Quadex. Last year at Gothenburg, I was like almost completely out during Quadex, and like only managed to like come during daytime with like full of pills. And apparently, I'm having a bit of the same problem here today. So if you guys see that I'm like starting to ramp randomly so just let me know that I'm off topic then. Yeah, so all of GNOME software started actually years ago when Richard Hughes started PackageKit. And that was basically because he had his wife who had a Windows laptop, and he wanted his wife to be able to use the computer, but she got this all the time, so Richard was like, yeah, I have to do something about this, and he made a deal with his wife that. If she installs Linux, then Richard will commit to fixing all his problems, and of course there was the dependency hell and all of this. So this is how PackageKit started, and with all this crazy architecture and stuff. And yeah, I'm not gonna go into this; it's too crazy. Yeah, and PackageKit was basically an abstraction over distribution packages. So there was RPM, and there was Debian's packages, and there was, you know, other stuff. Yeah, and on top of this was PackageKit with its very nice abstracted architecture. And one thing that was a very strong point in PackageKit was that it was really, really, really nice in architecture-wise. Like, things made sense there. Like, there were separate backends, and then there was a thing on top of that, and then a separate UI that talked to the dbus, and it was very, very nice architecture-wise. But that actually didn't make such a very, very nice UI, because the PackageKit frontend that we had, the GNOME PackageKit, it was basically just exposing the really nice architecture we had, the low-level architecture, just exposing all of that to the user, and it ended up quite confusing. So it was basically just having the same thing, just the same thing that it just tried to fix. It was just showing it and not actually fixing any problems. Yeah, so we have some more nice PackageKit screenshots. Yeah, and an error message here. Yeah, I think it was 2012. It was when Jakob Steiner and John McCann and Alan Day decided to start designing an application installer from ground up, like not relying on what was possible, but just designing the UI so that it would be nice and usable, and that so that it actually made sense. And so they started. So this is one of the mockups, one of the most recent mockups that just tries to be beautiful and usable. And so compared to PackageKit world, where the code like made really very nice sense architecture wide, GNOME software is much more messy actually. there's since GNOME software doesn't try to be so nice architecture way, it does try to be really nice UI wise. So this actually makes a much messier code, but that's okay. I think it's a small price to pay if we can have happy users. Yeah. So this is where what we have now. And this is latest GNOME software as of a few days ago. So this is the first landing page, and it has a nice big banners on top where that show our best available software and categories that you can browse and search for stuff. And so one of the main things that made GNOME software different from PackageKit was that it didn't try to do everything anymore. PackageKit was basically just try to show everything that was available in the distro, and that was very, very messy. But GNOME software did not try to do that anymore. Instead, it tried to be an application installer. So and that means that applications are first-class citizens there, and every app or anything you click on has nice screenshots and nice descriptions and everything. And this makes a much, much nicer user interface. So how did we make this possible? So behind the scenes, every app, every graphical app that is shown in GNOME software is uses called app data, and this is an example small app data file, and for an app to show up in GNOME software, each app needs to have this extra description on top of distro metadata. So for example, this is the app data description for GNOME software itself. It has an ID that matches up with the app itself, and then it has descriptions and screenshots, and this is basically what we show up to the user. When Alan and John and Jakob started designing GNOME software, I think it was the same year when Matthias Klump and Richard Hughes started the App Data project. And at first it wasn't really actually used much, and it was going really, really slow. But when the first GNOME software prototype got into Fedora, that suddenly caused like a huge, huge uptake in app data, because this is what was needed for apps to show up nicely in GNOME software. And since GNOME software at first was pretty much a Fedora-centric thing, it was the Fedora App Center first, and other distros started picking it up a little bit later. It meant that Fedora was basically driving all the app data effort. So at first we had like a separate add-on repository where we like glued these app data files on top of existing packages, and then a while later we moved those app data stuff into actual packages, and then maintainers started upstreaming them, and today I think most of like almost all of GNOME, I only know like two packages that don't have app data there, and the most of KDE and part of XFCE and lots of other upstream projects have app data files, and it has gotten a really, really nice uptake, and these days it's not just GNOME software that's consuming this, it's also the KDE App Center Muon, or I have no idea how to pronounce it, but yes, that thing, yes, and also Snap is starting to switch to app data, so this is this is pretty much the future of app metadata in Linux desktop. So we have Matthias Klump sitting there. So if you have any ideas or comments about the metadata itself, like how to improve this, he's the guy to talk to. So I'm not sure how well it is visible here in the graph. It's a little bit gray, but yeah. So anyway. So starting with last GNOME release 3.20, GNOME software also has ratings and support. And this is actually, so up until that release, GNOME software was pretty much driven by the Fedora people. It was Richard working on this, and me working on this, and a bunch of other people sometimes contributing. But in 3.20, in the spring, we had a hackfest in London, and we had Endless people there, we had Canonical people there, we had Red Hat people there, and we actually had all those like competing groups working really really nicely together. All the ground, and so and one of the I guess Ubuntu users here know that Ubuntu now also switched to GNOME software in their latest release, and one of the things they wanted from GNOME software was to able to show rating and user reviews, so they pushed for a UI for this that got integrated in GNOME software, and Richard wrote a backend for a review server, which is called ODRS. So the thing is that Ubuntu has their own review server, and ODRS is basically for like the rest of the distro ecosystem that doesn't have Ubuntu accounts and stuff. So far. ODRS has been shipping in Fedora and Arch, I think, and it has had some very very nice use. So the gray graph here shows the number of users on this, and we are reaching like 500,000 users there, and it has had very very nice uptake. So how does it all work? So much different to Ubuntu's review server, ODRS is open, and open in the sense that everybody can send their reviews. They don't need to have an actual account. And I must say that me too. Like I'm sure a lot of people here are thinking right now, what? How is it possible that to have no authentication or anything like this? And I have to confess that when Richard came up with the idea, I too was very skeptical about this and tried to convince him to do something different, but he's stubborn. Way. So he went ahead, and it seems to be working actually very well in practice. Every user who posts the reviews there, GNOME software looks up their machine ID and hashes it, and that's basically the user ID in there, and that makes it possible to like ban bad users, and also when we have a review, there are buttons under every review where you can say that was this review useful to you. Or if there was something like bad in this, like someone is using bad words or it's just spam, then it's possible to report this. And so far, all this has worked remarkably well. There have been very few people like abusing this, and the few abusers they have been caught in like pretty much in a few hours after posting something bad and blocked immediately, and it's working great so far. So these are just some examples how the reviews work here. So starting in this cycle, GNOME Software has a public a plugin API. So GNOME Software architecture is very plugin based. So which makes it very, very easy to add different kinds of backends. GNOME Software started largely as a Fedora app center, basically being able to. But over the years, it has gotten lots and lots of different new backends. So these days, it's able to install through PackageKit, and it has a separate Ubuntu backend that does not go through PackageKit, and then it has a Flatpak backend and OS3 backend, and Matthias, so what was the thing that you worked on that you had the plugin for? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the code for different backends is actually surprisingly simple to write. It's all abstract. So 3.22, we decided to make the plugin API public, in the sense that to make it possible to have out of tree plugins. And so one idea for this was basically for enterprise customers to if they need something specific from GNOME Software, to be able to like customize this, so they wouldn't need to have their own build of GNOME Software, but we could just ship in one extra plugin for those specific customers. So in 3.22, we have a public plugin API, and we have a generating documentation for the API. So and Richard wrote a series of blog posts for this. So if anyone is working on a distro level on GNOME Software and wants to add their own plugins, try to catch me afterwards, and we can discuss this. Yeah, so like I said, we had a Hackfest in London in the spring, and it really worked well. We had a nice cooperation between different distro people, and even though at first it seemed to be like a very Fedora centric project, it has a lot. Distros have started using it. We have Debian using it. We have OpenSUSE using it. We have Ubuntu using it, and Fedora, of course. And we are shipping it in RHEL, Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And so it seems that GNOME Software is basically becoming the de facto app center for the Linux desktop. So some more new features we have in GNOME Software. One thing we did for Fedora 24 is to make it possible to system upgrades. So this is one of the things that I must say that we've been missing in Fedora for a long, long while, and it was a and some other distros have had graphical system upgrade support for a while, and we were sadly missing it. So, but instead of doing it in like a very Fedora specific way, we did it in GNOME Software, so that pretty much all distros could use the same code if they wanted to, and this is how it looks like in Fedora. So. So a Fedora 23 user gets a pop-up saying that a new Fedora version is available. They click on the pop-up and then click on a button to download all the upgrades, which all happens in the background. And then when it's ready, they click install. The machine reboots, and all the packages are installed during the reboot, and then they just boot into their new fresh Fedora 24 system. And this is quite similar to regular system updates we have in GNOME Software. But we spent a lot time polishing this new feature for Fedora. We had Fedora QA testing it for. We iterated over it several times. So we had Fedora QA testing it and they reported a bunch of bugs. So I think this is very, very nice and stable now. So if you do get this pop up on Fedora 23, just click on it and you'll be in Fedora 24 and hopefully you'll still have a working system. Yep, so this is a picture of the future. So no, this is not the future we are going to have, hopefully. But instead, the future we are aiming for is where we have a split of a base OS and applications, so that we have the base OS on an OS tree level, updatable separately, and then on top of this, on a separate layer, we have Flatpak applications. And this is pretty much what Android, for example, has been doing, or Windows, or macOS. And I am personally very, very excited to be getting closer to that future. So Alex already gave a nice overview in his previous talk about Flatpak, and on Sunday there will be a talk by Owen for how the desktop future is going to look in his vision. So, but just in a few words. So the idea is that we have a base OS, Fedora, for example, which is like a small core, and that's all based in the OS tree. And OS 3, compared to a package-centric model where we are right now, OS 3 treats the whole base system as one single entity, so that instead of updating packages one by one and then having a huge test matrix where you have to test one package version together with another package version, and then a third package comes into the mix, and then there's like a huge explosion of the testing matrix. With OS 3, the idea is that the whole system is composed on a server level, and the user just downloads that exact copy on their machine, and get the exact same tested mix that the developers have been doing. And OS 3 also makes it possible to do atomic updates, so that the user downloads an update, reboots, and then is immediately booted into the new system. And it also makes it possible to have atomic downgrades as well, because we can keep the previous base system around as well. We can have two, three, a number of versions of the previous version available, and we can have a UI where the user can just boot into a previous version if there's a problem with the new one. So this is one of the things that we'll be aiming for the next cycle. I will be working on making the OS 3 thing in GNOME software work well. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not sure exactly what's on the screenshot here. Richard prepared it. I think it's Ubuntu Snappy support when GNOME software is running on Ubuntu. And it's doing something, yeah. It's coming along. Yeah. So we have Flatpak support in GNOME software. So one thing that makes Flatpak a little bit difficult to use is that, from GNOME software point of view, is that we can have the same app available as Flatpak, and also as a distro package. And this can be a bit confusing and difficult for the user. So what we did was to, so this screenshot there is when a user searches for Polari and gets two results. And I'm not sure how well it's visible on the screen here, but the higher result, this is the distro version, and the lower result is from the Flatpak. And we try to differentiate it by having a sandbox shield under the Flatpak app, and also there's a gray line that says source under each app. So one of them says that the source is Fedora project, and the other one is from GNOME. So hopefully this will make it easier for the users to know where the app is coming from. Yeah, and some more Flatpak screenshots. So this is actually, if you search for Flatpak, then you get all the Flatpak apps that GNOME software knows about. So since we are moving into a world of Flatpak, we are also moving away from a centralized distro system where we could be sure that all the apps that we use are free software. So and to educate the users a little bit, we try to show in GNOME software if an app is free or if it's proprietary software or if it's something in between. So free apps in GNOME software are in the next version are going to get a label that says free, and when you click on this, then you get all the license details, like if it's GPL or BSD license or MIT. And proprietary apps instead get a different label that says proprietary, and clicking on that shows the proprietary license details. So this is a little bit of a workaround because up until now we've been getting the actual license information, but this seems like an okay idea until we run into a monster like LibreOffice, for example. So I'm not kidding, LibreOffice has a license string that is that wide and in a font like this, so it's like a long text. It's like all possible free licenses are included there. It's like GPL2 and LGPL and LGPL3 and BSD and MIT and the Mozilla public license and so on and so on and so on. So we were just unable to show it in the UI because it would just take up the half of the page there. So yeah, yeah. So we did this instead now. So one thing that Alex mentioned in his talk, in his previous talk, was that it would be really nice to have an easy way to build Flatpaks, to have a service for this. And so this is something that I am personally I haven't been involved in, but this is something that Richard did, and I was editing the screenshots here and editing my talk during Alex's talk. And I put this here just to like show that Richard is working on a prototype, which makes it very very easy to build Flatpaks. So you just basically give it the JSON file, and it builds Flatpaks for you. So I'm not sure if it's publicly available yet, but this is something to look forward to. So if anyone wants to work on this. Sadly, Richard isn't here, but grab him on IRC yeah. So the thing I was talking before that we can have two apps, or even more, like one from the distro and one from Flatpak. So what to do if we if a user tries to install something from Flatpak that they already have installed as a distro package. So this is one idea that Alan came up with. is to have this kind of dialogue where we have the distro package and the Flatpak package, and then the user gets to choose whether to do parallel install or whether to replace the app. So this is, so far this is pretty much just discussion. But if anyone has a better idea how to solve this problem, grab Alan and discuss this with him, and grab me too, so I can be there. So that's it. Questions? So the question was if it's possible to download the review and the software review information from the server. So yeah, it's definitely possible. I don't think it's currently not available as a nicely packaged download, like a tarp or anything. But there's an API where you can programmatically ask for this and get the JSON file in response. So if you want to, yeah, definitely, it's all open and it's possible to get it.
I'll be quick. As far as backends and other types of software, what are your thoughts on supporting something like pip or other language-specific
system? GNOME software. So the question was, what are my thoughts on adding a backend to use pip or something or some other language-specific repository? So right now, software is very, very application-centric, and applications in GNOME software point of view are only graphical applications. It's something that you can click in GNOME shell that has a launcher, and that this is an application in GNOME software. And because of that, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have like a pip backend, because pip is pretty much used for distributing only Python much as applications. So I don't think it makes a lot of sense, but it would certainly be very, very easy to add a backend such as this. It's it shouldn't be a lot.
So I have a question. One of the things I've really been interested about with GNOME software and just an app store in general is building a relationship between the developer and the user, right? And one of the things we have in our distro focus model is the distro is the middleman between the user and the developer. So the user never sees the developer generally. So we have an opportunity to build that relationship using something like GNOME software. So what I would like to see, it's more of a request, is some way for a developer to reach out to the users, I mean, for feedback or maybe even the opportunity to, as Alex was alluding to in his talk, paying for software. Have you thought in that direction, you and Richard?
So this is exactly one of the things that Flatpak is trying to solve. So right now the distro landscape is very, very fragmented. We have a huge amount of distros all shipping like a little bit modified versions of the same app, and the developer has basically no control over it. So what we are hoping for is to have developers packaging their own stuff as Flatpak, and the distro moving a little bit away from the app distribution, so the distros would be like more focused on the core, and the developers would be shipping their own applications, and of course we will need definitely we will need at least a way to report bugs. So a very easy thing we could do is to just add a link to upstream Bugzilla, like. So if Flatpak metadata has a Bugzilla link, then we or bug tracker link, then we just show it up in the in GNOME software or something like that. This would be very, very easy to do. And yeah, of course, paid apps would be nice to do as well, but it's a little bit more difficult problem. But we would like to solve this as well somehow. Yeah.
Expanding a bit on that idea, I would really like to see a really easy way from GNOME software to get into the development, you know, and we have in Flatpak, we have the SDKs, we have really good ways to say, I want to code on this, I want to get the source code and I want a good SDK. Do we have design to make that work? Is that on the roadmap?
No, I don't think we've even thought of this, but maybe we could sit down with Alan later and talk about this. I don't know.
So I also would like to just expand on those because the upstream specification has support for a donation URL type, and since I think 3 days ago, support for a translation or translate URL type, which means that software centers like GNOME software could show a link, donate to this software here, or help translating the software into your language if you click on this button. For some reasons, the GNOME designers didn't like the donate button thing, so I'm not sure why this isn't added. But I think Richard will push for getting the translate button there, which is one easy way to get into developing the software and to help translating it into a different language directly from the GNOME software UI. So, no question, but just expanding on that.
Yeah, so the person speaking was Matthias Klump, who's the App data specification maintainer upstream, and he's the person to talk to get like donation links and stuff into the metadata specification. So
I have a question. I have Fedora installed on my parents' computers, and they are also have some external repositories like Oracle's VirtualBox repository, and Oracle is changing fingerprints for this repository as other people change their trousers. So, and immediately after DNF, you have to accept the new fingerprint, and they're not using the console commands. Immediately then, everything starts to break. They can no longer do any updates, and they can no longer install any software via the GNOME software application. Is there any plans to add maybe some visual debugger or have dialogues to press yes?
So this is a bug we need to fix. I don't think I need to comment anymore. Okay, so thank you everybody for listening to me, and see you at the conference. Thank you.